Morgan into San Clara Valley. We have Morgan Hill up on top. This is actually the Olin site. Most of you are familiar with the Perforate.
Here's the Olin site. The Perforate here. Here's the Olin site. The plan extends approximately 10 miles. The hot spot is over here, which is about a mile and a half long.
And then what we're looking at here is this is the intermediate aquifer where most of the drinking water supply wells are screened. And what this represents is the intermediate aquifer nitrate concentration. As you go from Morgan Hill down to Gilroy right here, and the purple represents 100 parts per million. Again, the drinking water standard in the MCL here is 45. You can see that the vast majority of this intermediate aquifer, the drinking water supply for this area, is seriously impacted.
And the, like, it's interesting that when we talk about this Olin site, what the board is primarily focused on whenever we have this discussion is how many people are exposed to perchlorate in this plume? How many people are drinking it? And what are we doing about it? Are we providing them with bottled water? Well, the other problem that exists here is nitrate. And
yes.
We're not asking that question.
Just for comparison purposes, there's 9 wells in the Augusta Basin right now that are above the MCL for perchlorate. But through some of the recent nitrate sampling, we understand there's 72 wells right now above MCLs for nitrate, and we're drinking from. So.
And we recently notified.
Yes. The
health department didn't. They refused. We did.
And a lot of issues.
Well, one of the problems is that the state law that deals with drinking water only applies to municipal supply wells. So cities providing, or communities or companies providing municipal supply wells have to meet the drinking water standards, and there's some trigger, there's some trigger points that it starts to get close to that, things they have to do. But for individual supply wells or small supply wells that provide more than small under a certain, I don't know if the threshold is numbers, but it's,
I think that's two.
So that there's no state law that says anything about meeting drinking water standards. It's really up to you as an individual to sort of.
Well, the water district said that they felt that they had notified people in the past that this, I don't know if this is strictly representing Olin's sampling most recently,
yeah.
If it's a compilation, but certainly there's data available from the past. So when we contacted the Environmental Health Department and the Water District and said, we think that everyone should be notified about these results, the water District said, for example, well, we've done that in the past and we have information on our website. Our response to that is, well, land ownership or rentals change. And you can't expect that because you did some kind of a comprehensive notification 3 years ago that that's really sufficient. So that was the gist of their response. They felt they had provided enough information historically, and it was a historic problem.
The 45 number, that is in our basic plan?
State drinking standard.
Where?
The state drinking standard.
So how is that not applicable to an individual private well?
It is applicable. It's just that there's no state law that requires anybody to do anything about it. Only if it's a municipal supply well with a municipality or a company providing municipal water, they have to make sure that they're supplying water that meets that's below that standard. But if you have an individual supply well, there's no agency, there's nobody that regulates that or requires anything to be done about it. It's just to tell them, hey, your well exceeds 45, here's the health impacts of that, you shouldn't be drinking it. And then it would be up to the individual to give themselves alternative water, to get a treatment system at their house.
Jeff's question was, what agency is primarily responsible for that? And the way I look at it is, we are. We are primarily responsible for protecting the people that are drinking this water, dealing with sources of pollution.
But our right. Way of doing it isn't, they're not the responsible party necessarily for causing it. That becomes an issue that you go after when it's a historical, agricultural, or other kind of problem. How do you even go after and solve it? But it's not the board's responsibility to make sure that people drink safe water. Yeah, it's just.
But it is our
find the sources of the pollution
right.
and reduce the load
right.
to the point where that we are protecting drinking water for the people, for those people that are drinking. That's my point.
So, and I was going to add that there's this other law that lets state employees find that there's drinking water.
I mean, that there's people are being exposed, you know, the Prop 65. Then there's that notification, but I'm not even sure that nitrate meat is in as a Prop 65 chemical. But it wasn't really the responsibility of this board to notify those people, but we did it anyway because nobody else was doing it.
What
does
it say on notification?
It said we've been monitoring, or there's been monitoring that, and your water exceeds this. Here's the potential health impacts, and here's where you can get more information to find out what to do about it. Because it is a fine line to not take on that responsibility that they have. They're their own private wells, and they need to take care of it. So.
I think we provided a copy of that to the board, but it sounds like we should send it again.
And then in the staff report, I noted that the Parada bill only addresses public water supply. And your effort is going to be to determine what existing data there is to start to characterize whether the individual or double or so bootleg well systems what impacts they might have to show or maybe look at that across the basin. Is there any language in Parada that provides an opening for follow-up or direction where this particular problem can be defined and then brought program, or is there any way to make use of Parada and set a difference in this problem? How can we add that as a component to what clearly is a big problem that's concerned?
The Parada bill is, first of all, the SB2X is this humongous bill that covers all things water in California. This part, this aspect of it is one little part of it, and so consequently it's very vague. It doesn't really have any specifics. It calls for two pilot projects, one in Salinas, one in Tulare County. But we are using it as an opportunity, like you're referring to at the latter half of your question. Is it an opportunity to raise the issue and, you know, basically make some progress on a very big problem? I think it's a great opportunity. So that's where we've been looking at it. And even though the focus so far, not only the language in the bill, but by other agencies and interest groups has been on community systems, we've been bringing up this issue of the individual systems.
Can the public go to a website and see pollution maps like this? They wanted to see in their area generally areas of concern.
It depends on where they it depends on where they live, because as Dean was talking about with the Monterey County Water Resources Agency, they've existed since the 40s. They've got a significant database. So, and same with the Santa Clara Valley Water District. So it depends on the area in terms of what's available. It's a mix.
Well, what's available is posted with people.
Well, not always. It's a real mix. When you just have small water districts.
I just thought those were great choices.
How about the Scotts Valley Water District?
I don't know whether we post that.
By golly, we should get somebody on.
We should. That's probably what we would post to be something we got from you.
Anyway, it's a mix.
How long did staff know about this?
Which?
This nitrate problem in this particular area.
The Yakima Basin?
Yeah.
We have data that we have since 2005. Wasn't brought up until recently, because when Olin pumps the perchlorate contaminated water, they need to treat it and their proposal is to reinject it. But they can reinject water that has higher concentrations than receiving water, so that's where they discovered that a lot of the nitrate in the air that needs to pump is higher.
simmering or kind of on the back burner, maybe we don't have all the data, there may be a problem.
You know, this is now growth of our vision effort and trying on the groundwater vision team, and I think on the other teams, is what are the biggest issues? What are the biggest problems? Let's push us to the front. Nitrates in groundwater hasn't conveniently fit in any of our programs historically. We kind of slip between the cracks. We have an underground tanks program to deal with fuels that have leaked from underground tanks. We have a slick program or a cycling program to deal with solvents or chlorate. But we haven't historically addressed that. Now, that's what we're trying to get at with the vision process. We've pushed this and other big, in this case, groundwater issues to the fore.
This is all part of the assessment phase of the vision.
It's also a reflection of how, when the water board started, they were created to do a point source pollution coming out of the pipe. And we largely dealt with reduce that. There are estimates of a 98% reduction in pollution sources over the decades. But non-point source pollution is not addressed, and this is non-point source pollution. So we're saying we've got to do the same thing with non-point source pollution. We have to address it directly. We have to reduce the loading from non-point source pollution the same way we did with point source pollution. And it's going to be even harder to do. That's what we're doing. That's what we're changing our organization to do. Instead of problems like this. You have heard about these other problems. Some toxicity, a huge issue. It's widespread due to both irrigated agriculture and some of the municipalities. It's a severe problem throughout our region. And loss of aquatic habitat is a severe problem throughout our region, both because of urbanization and because of agriculture. We're actually losing aquatic habitat. We've lost, in the past 100 years, over 90% of our aquatic habitat in California. And what's left of it, we're losing that. Over the past few decades, and over the past few years, we've largely an irrigated agriculture area because of the food safety issue. Those are the kind of things that we're taking up.
I want to throw on to that also. Russ hit on seawater intrusion and the greater issue of salts in groundwater basins. Issue too. Not just seawater intrusion, that is a big issue, but also just salting of the basin.
These are great illustrations of what we're doing currently. Instead of saying this is a program focused and legal regulatory issue, so how all that works, and you say those people have that, right? So let's just look at what are we doing? Are we seeing what is the information out there? So we have some groundwater basins in our watershed, and then how are we going to respond rather than what do I see in my eyes working on my permit? Ready for program X.
I have tools in surface water too to look at like watershed seals. You know, we have the TGL, we have the watershed plan.
State of our region, environmental state of our region. And we last year we uploaded 11,000 lines of data, more than all of the other water boards combined. So we're seeing our region in ways that we've never seen. We have the actual empirical data.
You're uploading this as part of the vision and goals.
They have 303D impaired waters list that all the regions are supposed to do. So it's going to the state board.
That's only surface.
Yeah.
All this other information.
Good point.
We take the same view, even though we don't have a programmatic or legal mandate to do it.
For example, we're required to do a 305B report.
Sorry.
I was just going to add between one of the reasons we included groundwater in the conditional waiver 5 years ago was because of the awareness of the groundwater nitrate issues, particularly. And so all of the staff presentations at Fort Water Quality Classes would always show one of our maps with all of the groundwater exceedances. So, to make sure that people were aware of it, the farmers were incorporating it in their decisions. So, it would make a start on it, I think, that weeks ago.
With these individual wells, these small wells, are we also looking at fortuitous area.
There's a, the short answer to the question is that there's no requirement to sample those wells.
Right, we understand that there's no requirement.
State Board has a program through their GAMA program, which is like swamp, it's the big framework, and as long as it's
English, Angela, English.
GAMA, Groundwater Annual Long Assessment Program, they have a domestic well piece of that, which looks at small wells, and it was purely for the purpose of figuring out that shallow groundwater water quality. And they work with Department of Public Health to do voluntary domestic well sampling in various parts of the state. And it was really to develop an awareness of what's in these small wells. And two interesting things came up. They sampled wells in like El Dorado County, Tulare, San Diego. And what we're seeing is that the two major issues are bacteria and nitrate. And for example, in Tulare, they found 40% of the wells sampled in Tulare exceeded drinking water standard. And that actually drove the product, that data. What is interesting about the domestic well sampling, what they did was they applied all of the required public health sampling to these domestic wells. So they got the full screen. Anything that, and in general, it's nitrates and bacteria issue. In some areas where there are a high density of septic, they also did some innovative stuff like pharmaceuticals and down some areas pharmaceuticals as well.
They did find pharmaceuticals?
Right, there's no standard for those, right. So it's hard to tell what the issue is. The reason really for this, the pharmaceutical sampling, was to look at the interaction between septic and the drinking water source. The other interesting thing that came out of the domestic well work that State Board did was, though, when they went to get these well to do the sampling and talk, you know, knock on doors, went to well owners, I would say a huge percentage, probably like 75%, thought that someone was required to take care of their well water. They thought that because they turned on the tap, that the water was clean. They had really had very little idea that it was their own individual personal responsibility to know the quality of the water. And most of these, it's the rural, California rural homeowners.
The thing I think is getting into a policy question statewide. You know, there's the science of monitoring and who might best need to do that. I know, like in Atascadero, the water company does nitrate sampling, I think, since the 1920s or so. I've had a few wells, and my experience was the health department required testing periodically in our county. And so, what I'm suspecting is it's completely different by jurisdiction. And it seems like it really is a statewide issue, maybe, to influence. You just need some consistent policy, and it's probably multi-jurisdictional, and nobody knows who's supposed to do what. It seems like we might be in a position to do the best job of monitoring in some systematic way, water board statewide, but it seems like we should work on a more of a policy recommendation that is implemented consistently. And it sounds like just suggesting that's the direction to go. I think we're all surprised that it's one of those who's in charge, who's taking the lead kind of things.
State Board has tried to engage the California Conference Directors of Environmental Health, which is the county public health director, and then have had it locally.
What has been their response?
The public health director?
Yeah.
They don't have the resources to, the response is they don't have the resources to deal with what happens when the whole state lights up nitrate, because then they are now responsible for what shutting down wells. So, for example, in Napa, they actually have ordinance that if they find out there's an exceedance of drinking water standard in a domestic well, they have to shut. They can't allow the homeowner to provide that water. And so they are a little bit of the mindset of, well, we're not sure if we want to know about it, because then we have to go out and shut down your water, and that's a problem.
Well, what we suggested, answer to your question earlier, Monica, I said I think the product bill is an opportunity, so what we suggested as part of this pilot study, and I was looking at it in terms of really there are two issues. There's prevention of the source, but we know that with how slowly groundwater moves, that's not a near-term proposition in terms of improving anybody's drinking water anytime soon. And the Morro Basin that Dean was talking about would probably be one of the most responsive places that we have in the region because it's so small. But a place like Salinas, you're talking about decades, depending on where you're on the groundwater basin. So there's source control, which is the longer-term picture. But then there's the more immediate issue of that tap water. So what we were talking about with the agencies in Monterey County as part of this opportunity provided by the Parada Bill was to maybe send out, do this mass mailing of nitrate or nitrogen strips where you can test the water very easily. They're super cheap. I think they're like 30 cents a piece. You get, you know, packs of 30 for 10 bucks or something. And with information, of course, about how to do the test, and then when you get a result, what does that mean? And my way of thinking is it would be very similar to our notification letter, where you don't want to scare people. You know, you want to provide the information, and then where can they get more information, what the risks are, and if they're, you know, childbearing age, or they're pregnant, or they have infants, it's a more severe risk, and that sort of thing. So that was an idea to deal with that more immediate situation. And then, as a pilot, if that works, then there'd be an opportunity then, hopefully, to improve on that and expand it, maybe on a statewide basis.
I want to respond to Tom's comment about statewide policy. And if, you know, we oftentimes we say when we're dealing with a particular issue, we say it would be great if we had a state policy to help us deal with this. But over the years, what we've realized is that if we wait for the state board to come up with a policy, a meaningful, effective policy, we'll all be dead. It's not going to happen. So what we need to do in our own region is assess the situation and take action and not wait for a public to take the lead, not wait for the state board or Cali GA. It just isn't going to work. And linking that to what you were saying for your question earlier, Jeff, are there other issues? One of them is the cost to remove nitrate from groundwater. 83% of the people in our region rely on groundwater, drinking water. 83%. And there is no more water out there. Like, you can build another pipeline, but that doesn't mean there's more water. Harvey was talking about Morro Bay being on state water. State water fluctuates. And when we have drought situations, there's no water in that pipeline. Because there's a pipe there, doesn't mean there's water. So, as you can read in the paper, on a regular basis, the state is in a crisis as far as water supply goes. Taking water from the Delta and transferring it down south and using it for agricultural purposes. That we're in a crisis situation as far as water supply. So that makes the groundwater all that more important. And we're trying to figure out right now how much it will cost municipalities and water purveyors to remove the nitrate that is in the water right now. Because they're going to have to remove it in order to use that water as a drinking water supply. And the numbers are so high that it's staggering. And we're estimating, ballpark estimates right now are that it will cost the municipalities and water purveyors in this region alone hundreds of millions to approaching $1 billion to remove the nitrate that's in the water now. And that's not taking into account the fact that we're still loading nitrate into
it. What about an individual, you know, system, a carbon filter, reverse osmosis membrane system? I had one, you know, for my own water in my house, and it wasn't all that expensive. It was the capital cost, and now it's just some electricity to operate it. Is that effective in taking out nitrates? And
reverse osmosis would work.
Yes. Okay.
Alternative are resin exchange, ion exchange,
right.
Not unlike what's going on with the Olin,
right.
Different resin, but that type. The numbers don't work economically right now. The price of water is not sufficient to support treating the water. The most effective way to deal with it right now is blending. Find low concentration water and blend the two to get your nitrate concentration.
Right. We're talking about individual.
Yeah.
Individual well owners.
I was talking about the cost of water purveyors and municipalities.
Yeah, and I'm
providing larger supplies of water.
Yeah.
And I was talking about the larger systems.
Right, and I'm concerned about the small people, the small guys out there that thought someone else was taking care of this for them all these years, and they've been drinking contaminated water.
Like they were first up.
Well, that's what we were hoping with our notification letter, that someone would get this letter and go to Costco and get themselves an under the sink unit right away. That would resolve the nitrates and their awareness to me. I mean, that's what I would personally do.
Well, and you're very educated.
Right.
And so whatever you're going to tell people that are uneducated needs to be really clear and
right.
simple, and they need to know who else they need to call to
right.
get follow-up information about
right.
their options.
That was definitely not a letter. It was all the information that you would need.
Yeah, I would like to see the letter again now.
Yeah.
That's a good point to focus on the individual. That's slightly disagree with you, Michael, on the policy level. Even if you don't wait at the state, a region right now, also believe in Maslow's theory of motivation on a people side. People are overloaded with problems and information right now. One more person said here's something else to worry about and it costs you money. Doesn't have a lot of impact on people. And I think getting information and tiers of solutions that an individual can look at, you can personally take action, but I think we've got to work regionally with other entities, whether it's health departments, water purveyors, et cetera, that it's got to be a joint policy solution, it seems to me, and how you communicate to folks that they can kind of decide, how do I prioritize all these things going on in my life if you can really have an impact? Because I think we have to have those steps of what you can do individually, but also present it in a way that people can hear in a very bad economy.
I think the policy is simply to get the water clean. That's the goal. That's the target. And
it's multi-jurisdictional.
It is, but within our region,
yeah.
we have some autonomous authority to take action. We've got our basin plan, which is a set of our own regulations, which is law, and so we can do things if we see fit on our own time schedule.
Question I would have, since this would be a huge undertaking, what resources do we have to support that, staff-wise and dollar-wise?
So, some of the actions, kind of shifting it on the sponsor of the groundwater vision team, and this isn't entirely any program's responsibility. That's part
right.
of
right.
the dilemma here. But from the groundwater vision team perspective, some things we're looking at is protection of recharge areas, because actually dilution does work in this scenario. So if we can stop slabbing up critical recharge areas and recharge more water to the basins, that's beneficial to groundwater quality. Additionally, understanding the basins, it's shifting to a watershed viewpoint. We call it basin view. The holistic approach to groundwater quality way. Michael mentioned, historically we've dealt with point source style mentality. Moving towards a basin, and what's the health of the basin, and trying to establish monitoring systems that can tell us the ambient water quality in basins and sub-basins within our region, so we can also get to what are the critical source areas we have to deal with. We're taking action on those. Dean's presentation was sort of a sampling of what we did or what was done in a small basin, and then where the pilot project is going, but our vision is to do this in all our bases.
Rush, you said, where are the resources we have? We have our entire agency. And what we're doing is incorporating action in everything that we do to address these problems that we're talking about today. All the programs that we have are just tools. So what we're asking ourselves is, how can we use these tools differently to address these big region-wide problems?
Well, we're going to really have to leverage our county stakeholders because they hold a lot of the data, so to speak. It'd be too costly for us to go get it. So we have to have good relationships with them. Like Monterey County, for instance, those agricultural wells, there's access to those agricultural wells, are key to really understanding the distribution of nitrates in the valley. So I see that as being critical.
And that relationship with other agencies.
And that part's really critical, too. Can't do that without their involvement in this. Are the counties cooperating?
Varying levels of cooperation and varying levels of sophistication to Monterey County Water Resources Agency.
go to Karen.
Oh, no, I have one of those next.
Sidebar.